solo adventure awaits you.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Don't let safety concerns stop you. Hello, everyone. I'm producer Catherine. This episode of Solo Travel Talk is part two, all about safety. In part one, Astrid went into location and lodging. In this episode, you'll hear all about getting around, being safety-minded with your attire, gadgets, and finally, cultivating confidence. Let's get to Astrid and my first question.
We touched on this a little bit, but I'm thinking about getting around. There's been many times where I'm in a foreign city and I know that I'm radiating that I'm lost, you know, that I'm trying to figure out where to go. And I know I'm sending off bad vibes of just being this lost tourist. So I have a question about just getting around. What are some of the practical considerations? For example, when you are traveling, you don't know your way around.
Okay, there's a lot of things that you need to do to basically kind of remove that deer in the headlights look, because that is not good, okay? Before you go, really get your either your guidebooks, or you study what you see in terms of maps of the city on the internet. I look at YouTube videos a lot about places, cool things to do, cultural do's and don'ts, you know, what to wear, lots of things. I like to look at the YouTube videos because it kind of gives me an idea of what the place looks like, feels like, how the people, you know, just the whole kind of scene there. So that kind of helps me before I even go. So you do research that way to familiarize yourself on the way the place looks, the culture, the people, etc. Then, like I said, when you get to the hotel, you make friends with the concierge. You go get some of the maps. You have your list of things that you want to do. If you want to go to them without some assistance, you go sit down in the restaurant, the coffee shop. You can plot your way on the maps. You know, if you like to use Google and Google all the location things, they're great. They'll tell you exactly how to walk to get from point A to point B. But, you know, I talk to the concierge and I really get their input and get them to mark me on the map where it's unsafe. And how, really, what's the best way to go? Can I walk? If I can't walk, what is the mass transit that I take? And I make them write it down for me. So that's first and foremost. I know how I'm going to get there and how I'm going to get somewhere safely. Number one, I like to walk there. If I can't walk there, if I can take mass transit, if I like it, I'll use that, okay? Then second is the taxi, you know, and taxis, I must say, I feel like taxis are probably the most vulnerable point or situation a solo traveler, especially a solo female traveler, can get themselves into. I mean, there are things that can happen on mass transit, but the taxis, And so I have a lot of taxi tips, and I really kind of want to go into those taxi tips with the listeners because I feel strongly about them. Okay, first of all, when you're using taxis, the more you can get your hotel to get the taxi or to book the taxi, the better. Try never to just hail a taxi off the street. That's the most vulnerable way to get a taxi. If you have gone somewhere and you need a taxi back, or you're in some situation where you need a taxi, try to go into a restaurant or a nearby hotel or even a shop and ask the owner or the manager to please call you a taxi. That little barrier that taxi was called by this business rather than this lonely, you know, solo female out there is better. So think like that, okay? Secondly, always have that hotel card in your purse, because that's the way that your taxi cab driver knows exactly where to go. Because you might say, oh, well, it's the Hilton, you know, on Church Street or whatever. And, you know, if you show them exactly that card, that they know, they should know, and they can key it into their GPS or whatever. So always carry that hotel card. Some people even, and some safety experts say to do this for the solo female traveler, go ahead and put in Google where you are and the route you should take. So if the taxi cab driver gets way off of the route, you can mention to him that I'm following you on Google and where, you know, it, so just think about that. I've never done it, but I think that that is kind of smart, because sometimes I've been in New York City and I'm thinking, this seems like it's so long to get, you know, I don't think it's this far away. Then keep your discussions with the cab drivers to a minimum. I'm telling you, cab drivers, they come in all kinds. I mean, some of them are so talkative, they just want to talk, talk, talk. A lot of them are just bored. They're interested. They want to know, you know, and they're harmless. But first and foremost, if they ask you if you're alone, what you're doing here, whatever, it's just say, well, you're meeting your husband. Just always say that. When they start that, don't even say, well, I'm here on a getaway or blah, blah, blah. Don't even go there. Just say, well, my husband, I'm meeting my husband. Just cut it off. Okay.
My burly husband.
Or you're tagging up with a tour group or whatever. You know, and basically, really, be nice. Don't be what I consider aggravating or something that would make somebody say, oh, that, you know what I'm saying?
Hurt or abrupt or
anything
like that. Yeah,
just treat it business-like. But you know, because you never know what you say. That they might not be doing anything, but they might give somebody else information about you, that you are by your... Yeah. I mean, when you don't think like a nefarious person, you don't think that this is going to put you in harm's way. Keep the minimum chatting with taxi cab drivers just at a very low level. But be nice. Don't be aggravating. Avoid taking taxis, subways, and trains at night. I mean, you know, in some places up to about 10 o'clock, it's okay. But the taxis, oh my God, no. If you need to use a taxi at night, get the hotel to arrange for you to get to a certain place and to have a certain driver or livery service pick you up and take you back. Do not get a taxi at night. It's just, I don't ever do that. Never take a taxi by yourself if you've had too much to drink. And that is one of the number one safety things. Don't drink too much by yourself if you're out. If you want to drink a little more than you normally do, or you're going to get a little bit tipsy, do it at the hotel, in the bar, or, you know, unfortunately, ideally in your room. But the bottom line is, don't do it and get in a taxi drunk. Oh, my God. That is a absolute no, no, no. A lot of people say, keep your phone on. If something happens, you can just call 911. And know how to call 911 in wherever you are. That's another thing. Get your concierge to give you the emergency number of where you are in the city, how you would call it if something happened to you. Very important. Always sit in the back seat. Don't get in the front seat with the driver. Get in the back seat. I always get in the back seat beside the driver because I'm thinking he doesn't want to get killed. So maybe on the passenger side, he might turn a little bit too soon. Somebody might broadside us. So I always sit in the back seat behind the driver. Plus, he can't look at me as much. You know, not that I really care, but... You know, it's a business thing. He's supposed to get me from point A to point B. It doesn't matter who we are or whatever. Don't take a cab with another person in it. Set you up for some kind of bad thing to happen. Don't get into a cab with another person in it. moving on from taxi tip safety is, you know, when you don't really totally know where you are and how to get places, first day, do a hop-on, hop-off tour. Or go on some of these group tours in the city. Get the concierge to book you a ticket. Then you kind of get the lay of the land. You kind of see where the main streets are, etc. That's a really good thing. And then when you're at a place where there's not a lot of English, you don't understand the language, and you're really concerned about getting anywhere, get a car and a driver. It's well worth it. And in many of the places where they don't have a lot of English or whatever, typically these services are very affordable. I did it in Russia. Every time I've been to Russia, I've had that. The one time that I spent 5 weeks in China, I used it extensively. Very affordable, great. And they give you great service. If you're pleasant, oh my gosh, it just is wonderful. You become close to these guides. You know, all of them I've ever been with, they're very highly trained and vetted from the government. So they're good. So I suggest that. Okay, that's basically some of my tips about just being lost or whatever in terms of walking, not knowing where you are. Use some of these things in terms of your logistics, and you won't feel so disoriented anymore. You know, it's like anything. The first day or two, you're a little not sure, but after the third day, I mean, I'll use this example. I was in Venice in September. Wonderful walking city. No cars. I mean, you walk everywhere. It's fabulous. Well, the first day or two, I kept kind of getting turned around and, you know, whatever. But after the third day, I knew exactly always how to get back to the main thoroughfare that I would walk on. And then I knew exactly where I took my left. And then what bridge I went over, what the next right was, what the next left, the final bridge, there was my hotel, my wonderful hotel. But my point is you get this way. After the third, fourth day, it becomes like where you live. Hmm. You know, even your hotel room feels more homey and comfortable. You know, so it's part of the culture shock, etc., you know, being unfamiliar with everything. But you get through that. You get through that.
This comes into play a lot with some of the things you talk about, Astrid. What recommendations do you have about composing yourself? How a traveler holds themselves? Maybe their body language?
Well, I always say, be natural. Be yourself. Stay relaxed. Just try to keep in that zone. No matter where you are, that's very important, because, you know, if you start to feel too edgy, people around you can feel it. I mean, it's a fact of nature, animal, part of animal that we're all like. So slow down and be patient. You know, don't rush things. Sometimes you might have to rush, but try not to, because it's those kinds of emotions that start the anxiety and the fear, and that creeps in. And let me tell you, when that creeps in, that's when the unsavory characters, they are great at picking that up. So try to be natural, be yourself, and stay relaxed, okay? When you're speaking, speak in a firm voice, not too loud, which sometimes I am, but not too loud, and not too fast. A lot of times Americans will just, you know, blah, 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 you know, and it completely makes other people from other areas uncomfortable. So think about how you're speaking. Stay rested. This is another thing. Let me tell you, if you get too tired or you haven't had a good night's sleep and this is over and over, that's when some things can happen, because you start losing your problem-solving ability. You're feeling a little stressed. Your thinking gets clouded. Not good. So when you're kind of feeling like that, don't do too much. Just let it go. Let some of your agenda or your itinerary go. Take a lot of breaks. Stop in the cafes. You know, kind of regroup and relax. You know, get yourself to another point. Just get relaxed. So that's important, because I say here, think and pause, because you have to always think and pause really before you do anything or you say anything when you're completely unfamiliar with a place or what you're doing. Now, if you've been there a couple of days, you're starting to get familiar. Well, it's not as bad, okay? It's very important to kind of have that sense of presence that you are confident, even though, you know, and you're in a place where you've never been before. And this is kind of trite, but walk with your head up. Don't walk around like, oh, you know, just, you know, sometimes I will kind of like think, well, let me just kind of think that this is a part of Baton Rouge that I've never been to, you know. Like, I live in Baton Rouge, but like a new subdivision or a new area, I'm not going to go in there like, oh, I don't know. Just, I'll go in there wide open and looking around, just natural, like I'm trying to understand or see everything that's new here, but not like, oh, you know, there's a certain kind of way that you prevent yourself from looking like basically deer in the headlights. And that's what you don't want to look like. You don't want to look like basically you're lost, or, you know, you're just uncomfortable. So that's real, real important. And basically just use your common sense. If your gut tells you that you don't like it here or something is not right, leave. I mean, that goes for if you've checked into a hotel, you spent the night there one night, and you really don't like something about it, the staff, what, you know, the money is not worth it. Check out and go to a Sofitel or a Hilton or somewhere where you know you're going to feel safe, okay? So watch other people's body language, watch your body language, and, you know, use your common sense. And if something's getting ready to happen or you feel, just say, stop. I mean, one word, and say it, look at them and say, stop. This is what the safety experts say. And then scream, run. I mean, you know, do something. Don't just freeze, okay? And absolutely try not to aggravate them. Just be firm, because usually people who want to do something that is bad, they don't want to get caught. And they want to take somebody who's just like, oh, scared, and they'll just melt, okay?
Passive.
Yes. Okay, then here we come to the gadgets again. If you don't feel confident when you're walking around or, you know, in a place, and you just still, you can't quite get there to feel like that, you know, oh, I got this. This sounds really kind of, I don't know how to describe it, kind of wacky, or not wacky, but kind of something you wouldn't think about that makes perfect sense. Bring a stick umbrella. You know, if you are going to walk a lot and you're not sure, just bring that stick umbrella. The statistics show that women do not get attacked or whatever when they have a stick umbrella. Or it's rare that happens.
It's a reducer.
Oh, yeah. Yes. The stick umbrella is basically...
Good to know.
En guard. No, I'm kidding. Also, a whistle. And I actually did take a whistle when I went to China that I wore around my neck some days when I was walking around at first. After a while, I didn't feel like I needed to wear the whistle. But the whistle, if something's happening, you can pull that whistle out and just start blowing and screaming. And let me tell you, people who want to do something to you, they'd rather go do something to somebody that doesn't have a whistle.
That's not causing a fuss.
No. Yeah. And then the last gadget that I have ordered one, and it's supposed to be ready and be online. I just ordered my color yesterday. It's called Roar for Good. I'm extremely excited about this gadget because it is fabulous in terms of female safety. It's a little round disc that you'll be able to either wear on a cord around your neck. You can put it on your belt or on your purse. And if something happens that is frightening you, or somebody attacks you from behind, or something happens, all you have to do is press on this little round disc that is about the size of a quarter, and it makes a screaming loud sound, supposedly like a fire truck or a police. So it's very loud, very shrill. When you press this, it alerts your contacts, wherever you are in the world, where you are, and something is happening. As well as I understand, in many places, it's going to be able to be connected to some kind of law enforcement. It's called Roar for Good, and or the company is, and it's the Athena model, this little disc. But I'm very excited about that because I think it will revolutionize in many ways safety for women, whether they're jogging or they're getting into their car in a high-rise parking lot, they are traveling, and they're sightseeing, or they're whatever. If they have this little thing that they can press that makes a horribly loud noise, and it lets people know that they're having an event, especially law enforcement, let me tell you something, the bad guys are not going to go after the women with Roar for Good. So I'm excited about this gadget.
Anybody who follows you on social media, Astrid, they know that you are a very stylish person, and you talk a lot. We talk a lot about how you present yourself, especially when traveling. How does the stereotypical tourist attire play into your comments about safety? Do you make specific recommendations about things like wearing jewelry or carrying a handbag?
Oh, I have a lots of do's and don'ts there. And I'll try to be kind of brief because I want to do a whole podcast on dressing for safety and safety tips for the solo traveler in terms of what to wear and what to pack.
So this is sort of like an intro.
Yes. Okay, first of all, wearing tourist attire or looking like a tourist marks you as a tourist, which unfortunately raises your chances to be a target. Don't think tourist attire, and that's horrible to say, because when we go on vacation, we want to, you know, wear our trainers and just wear whatever we want. Could be outlandish, or just you bought all kinds of new clothes or whatever. Don't look like a tourist. First and foremost, try to blend in. Try not to stand out, okay? A smart solo traveler is concerned about safety at all times, chooses the wardrobe that they bring carefully. Not only do they dress comfortably and for the weather, but they're mindful of the culture where they're traveling to. The culture is so important. Because what we wear here in the United States, like say, you know, Lululemon and, you know, our good-looking workout wear that everybody wears now, or, you know, some of our more casual kind of things, that stands out in other places. And people are like, they don't like it. There's some type of offense there. And when they see that, especially if people are looking to target tourists to, you know, maybe swipe a purse or try to get an iPhone or something like that, they see it quickly. You know, if you're going to somewhere like Russia, Morocco, Middle East, Dubai, some of the places, watch some of those YouTube videos. Just plug in what to wear when you go to Beijing or what to wear when you travel to China. You'll get some good videos on what to pack, what blends in. You'll also see the way the Chinese are dressing, and you'll see the way that the foreigners who are in China are dressing. So you take some cues from that, okay? But basically the concept is dress conservatively, simply, and modestly. Just keep it simple. Basic colors, classic styles, key pieces, pants, jeans, shirt, top, sweater, jacket, and usually some kind of long coat, either lightweight or whatever that's all weather. Nice quality, but not too expensive. So you don't want to bring any of your designer clothes, because that in itself, they're looking for the designer clothes, because that means money target. You don't ever really want to look wealthy. You want to look confident and tasteful, but not wealthy. Wear comfortable, well-made shoes. The big white towels, look at, especially, I should say this, but some of the older travelers there, they're so excited about traveling. They all have the white big trainers with the big soles, and they have their backpacks, and they're so happy. They look, I mean, oh my gosh. And I'm not being critical, but if you're a solo traveler, look, just shoot to wear, you know, black or, you know, darker colored, well-made walking shoes. I like Aerosol. I think they make great shoes with, they're comfortable, and a lot of them are very well constructed that your feet don't get tired, your back doesn't hurt. But your shoes, don't let your shoes give you away. And Americans, for some reason, I mean, they wear all kinds of shoes when they're traveling. And let me tell you, that is a big, big sign. It's funny that people would look so closely at it, but the shoes, oh my gosh. Leave your good quality, expensive jewelry or designer goods, anything that's designer, leave it at home. Here again, Target, Target, Target. Do wear an inexpensive wedding ring. If you have a real nice wedding ring, don't wear it. Go buy just a band. Whether you're married or not, wear a wedding ring. Very important, because, you know, that automatically, you know, if somebody's looking to steal something or do something that's not in your best interest, if you have a wedding ring on, they'd rather go for somebody who doesn't. When you're going to other cultures where they do dress differently, like say in some of the more friendly Muslim countries, you don't have to wear the hijab or the abaya, but you must, you know, don't wear anything that is above the kneecap. They really don't like, you know, anything like shorts or, you know, it's better to wear dresses to at least the calf. Or pants, no sleeveless tops, tops that go below the elbows, or even long sleeve. You don't have to cover your head, but I know when I went to Dubai the first time, they recommended that I always have some kind of pashmina or long scarf that I could drape over my shoulders or even turn it the other way in the event that I would go somewhere and I might want to casually wrap it around my head, especially if I was going to visit a mosque or somewhere where it was appropriate and part of their culture to do that. Now, they don't expect you to be fully shrouded or anything like that. People know you're not, you know, you're from a different country or you're a foreigner, but they do like when you are respectful. So that's nice. And I did it sometimes, and I enjoyed doing it. I thought that that was a way to for me to say that, you know, I respect your how you dress, etc. I'm not, you know, I don't live here, but I do respect it. So important.
It's part of your experience, and also just saying, sort of acknowledging you're a visitor to their culture.
Yes, and thank you for letting me come here, and I'm having a great time.
Hosting me.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Backpacks. Make sure you've got, they have ties in them, as well as they can snap shut, because it's on your back. And that's where somebody could be fiddling around if you're smushed into a subway or just anything where people are close. They can get in easy. I'm telling you, the pickpockets are
skillful.
They are so skillful. You can't even imagine. And then also purses that you can crossbody that have some kind of chain or some kind of reinforced strap that can't be cut or can't be ripped off your shoulder. Because there's some areas, you know, there's lots of instances in southern Italy where, you know, kids on motorcycles will go past you on the sidewalk and yank your purse off and you'll fall down and they have your purse. Or they'll cut your purse or whatever. But if the strap is real hard, it doesn't bust or whatever, it's much safer. So that's a clothing tip, but it's important.
Do you ever wear a money belt?
Yes. Every now and then, because when you're walking around, a lot of times it's best not to have all of your money or your credit cards and debit cards in one wallet or one place in your purse. You know, sometimes it doesn't matter. And I always keep my cash in a little change purse and my credit cards in an FI or RIF, I don't know. It's the
that little protective.
Yes, yeah. I have a little aluminum or some kind of protective thing that I put my credit and debit card in. So I keep those separate. But in certain places, you might want to keep your cash in a money belt, or your cash in the passport in a money belt. Okay, some people even do it in their socks, or you know, in their boots. But yes, sometimes I do that. It just depends on where it is and how I feel. I don't always do that, you know. But I'm constantly, you know, I have all these little systems. Okay, I have three things I'm carrying today: my purse, my camera, my iPhone. You know, and every time I go somewhere, I think, do I have my purse, my camera, my iPhone?
Check in with your three.
Yeah, exactly. And in my purse is my sunglasses, my credit cards, my money, my passport, and things like that. It go over that over and over. But I do use a money belt from time to time.
We all know, all of your listeners know, that you make friends wherever you go, worldwide. Do you ever restrict what you share about yourself or, for example, fib and say you're going to go meet a friend at some locale, even if you aren't?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I have a lot of people that want to talk to me. I don't know what it is about me, but I do draw.
You're approachable.
No, I do. I you know, I have people saying, oh, you know, I know you or whatever, and I know some of it, you know, is kind of a come on, but not really. A lot of times people actually think they do know me or whatever. So I'm really cautious about what I tell strangers. And because you never know why somebody is trying to befriend you, you know. So first of all, first and foremost, you know, I always let them know that I'm married. You know, I mean, within 15 minutes, some kind of way, I throw the bomb in. And this doesn't always, you know, it's not only men or whatever, but it's, you know, you make some kind of reference to, you know, you're going back to the hotel, I have to go meet my husband
Our fake wedding band we're wearing, right?
Yeah, or whatever. So it just kind of, you know, stops. Even though it might not be in whatever the person's mind, you kind of, you've
put them on notice if that was something they were thinking
about. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Then, you know, just be careful. Take time. If you're, like, say that you had a hotel and somebody starts talking to you, you know, a couple of ladies or, you know, a married couple or whatever, be nice, but don't open up too much. Give it a couple of times before you're ready to really talk. I always think this is like a business meeting. Like, you know, you basically, you're in control. So just let them do all the talking, or say thank you, but I have to go somewhere, or I'm supposed to meet my husband, or whatever. Just don't be too talkative. But then on the other hand, you meet some really nice people. Like when I was in Marrakesh, I met the nicest two doctors. And I ended up going on a tour with them to the Atlas Mountains. I'm now Facebook friends with the wife. And, you know, that was part of the wonderful time I had in Marrakesh. So you don't want to close yourself off, but always think that, you know, there is some risk when you talk to strangers. I carry a business card, and, you know, that's kind of the way I handle it, basically. Like, if you really want to get in touch with me, this is my business information. And I kind of always leave it like that. But I must say, I've met some really very nice people along the way. And I'll cite a couple of more examples. There was a young clerk in Moscow that I bought a whole lot of things from in a gift shop. And I didn't intend to do that. I was looking for a samovar. But she spoke such fabulous English. And she was very young, probably 18 or 19 years old. And I thought, how in the world? This girl must be extraordinarily intelligent. So I began to talk to her, and she said she wasn't born in Moscow, but she was born in Dagestan, and she had moved to Moscow to get a job and her husband, and she told me she had a newborn daughter. She was just charming. And so I thought, I'm going to buy all of my gifts from Russia, souvenirs from this wonderful girl, because she is so smart and there's something special about her. Well, after I had spent about an hour in there and I found a fabulous samovar, you know, she looked at me and she said, you're an angel. She said, and I said, no, I'm not that. And she said, I was going to get fired today. She said that my boss told me I wasn't selling enough. Haven't had enough tourists. And that if I didn't sell a certain amount of money, that I was going to lose my job. She was so sweet, and it was such an enduring thing. And I had spent quite a bit of money, but I was so happy that I had chosen to do that. But she shared that with me. Then, before I left, she left a gift at the hotel where I was staying, which I didn't know. And then when I got to the hotel, because it was in Moscow, and they're very security conscious, and especially for foreigners, they told me that a gift had been left, but they did not allow her to leave it. So I was a little bit sad about it, but it was so sweet. Within 3 weeks after I got home, I got a Facebook request to be friends with Medina. So I have been friends now with her on Facebook. I'm watching her little girl grow up. And I went back to St. Petersburg and didn't get to go to Moscow a couple of years ago. And she said that her daughter had seen on Facebook that I went to St. Petersburg, and she was so upset. And that, when I go back to Russia, I have to come to Moscow. But to make a long story short, that's so endearing to me. And there's something very unusual about this connection. Is whenever I'm having a really bad day, I don't know what it is, I always get some kind of message from Medina. It's just so beautiful. It's some kind of spiritual connection there. And I think that's some of what happens to you when you travel solo. You let things just evolve. So you have to kind of use your common sense. And if you're relaxed and you are yourself and you're being careful, your discernment gets better and better, and these kind of things come your way. So I wanted to share that little story because I have a lot of things, maybe not exactly like that, but I love to talk. So, you know, I'm always very careful about who I talk to and what I talk about. But when it starts to happen and it's supposed to happen, it's really nice.
I love that story. I'm glad you shared that. All right. So the whole theme of this entire show is all about the idea of safety and planning and the combination of those things making us feel confident. But I know that you are kind of an adventurer. We've talked about using planning as part of being safe and confident, but how does the solo traveler balance all of that with spontaneity?
Okay, well, that's kind of what I just talked about. It's this spontaneity thing. And it's a constant challenge for somebody like me because I have usually my list of to-dos, my itinerary, what I must do that I want to experience. But when you kind of happen into something, you have to decide whether you want to go with the flow. You know, if you're sitting outside, say you've decided to have coffee and listen to some of the classical music, they have a couple of restaurants, say in St. Mark's Square in Venice. I'll use Venice because I just went there, and a lot of these go with the flow minutes happened to me there because it's such a fabulous city. Well, I thought, oh, I'll sit down here for an hour and listen to the classical music at one of these old famous cafes. I think it was Cafe Flora, and watch the people and the pigeons and everything. Well, it was so wonderful. I ended up staying there 2.5 hours because I started to think about different things. I started to write in my journal. I reoriented, etc. So, you know, you just kind of have to pick, you know, kind of see what happens. And there's another thing that happened to me in Venice. That's kind of one of these serendipitous things that you, when it's starting to happen, you just kind of know you need to go with this flow. Well, I had decided one day that I was going to the old Jewish quarter, the ghetto, because the ghetto in Venice was, if I'm correct, the first ghetto in the whole world was in Venice. So, and they have a museum there, and it's architecturally interesting. So I thought I would go and spend, you know, an hour and a half maybe in this area, maybe, you know, have lunch there, whatever. So I went, well, the museum was closed, so I didn't really get to see anything. I was a little disappointed. I did stop and get a cappuccino and regrouped and rally, and I went outside of this area and I started walking towards my next destination. I was going to catch a Vaporetto, and I saw this painting of this carnival scene. It was a beautiful painting, you know, with all kinds of vibrant colors, and I thought, oh, who is that artist? So I went up close, and they had information. This gentleman by the name of Tony Green from New Orleans.
And, you had to go halfway around the world to find.
In Venice. So I go into his gallery, and his work is wonderful. I mean, it's not happenstance that I would be attracted to certain kinds of looks and vibrancy in painting, you know, coming from the area that I'm from, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, South Louisiana, and him being the same way, and him having these themes of carnival and life and soulfulness with exoticism. So I went in there, and he was in there painting, and I started talking to him, and oh my gosh, it was... We talked for about 45 minutes. He had this one painting, and I looked at it, and he said, do you have any idea what this painting means or whatever? So I looked at it, I said, and I told him what I thought it was. He almost fainted. That was exactly what he had painted. I mean, he couldn't believe it. But he, you know, it's kind of funny, and you will find this when you travel, especially when you travel solo, because this opens you up to these kinds of things more. If you're with a group or your husband or a friend, it's less likely to happen. But it's kind of like, you know, you tune into certain things, and birds of a feather flock together. It's kind of funny how that works and how that happens. But, you know, he told me he was a musician, and he also was a painter, and he lives in Venice half of the year and New Orleans half of the year. And, you know, he was talking about all the people that are his friends and he associates with and where he's shown his work in New Orleans and everything. And, I mean, it was lots of people that I was either familiar with or I've had contact with. So he gave me his card. And I really do intend to contact him again and get him to help me, because what I'm going to do, I'm starting this in 2017, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, we're going to be putting together trips that are focused on cultural activities or specific art focused trips or kind of theme-based trips. And I do want to do some things in Venice. And so I think he's the perfect contact for him to help me talk to the right people and find those magic places in Venice and things that, you know, are just extra special. So the bottom line is, you know, spontaneity when you're traveling solo, it's kind of always lurking there, you know, so you have to make that decision whether you can do something that is a must do another day, or if this is just more important, you have to let something go. So it's a constant for somebody like me who's very interested in a lot of different things. It's a constant battle, because I can not waste time, but I can spend a lot of time somewhere where I had allocated maybe only an hour.
And I'm wondering, too, if you've already done all the things that you've planned, you have built up your confidence, you've done the things to be safe, you've followed your common sense, that then doing all the spontaneous things just is a little bit easier because you've taken care of all those other pieces.
Absolutely. I mean, when you've done all that, then you start to feel more comfortable or natural. Like, you know, this isn't somewhere I should be scared of, or these people or whatever. It just, you know, you go into a drugstore and buy some lipstick like you would.
Like you would here, yeah.
Yeah, Walgreens. Yeah. You know, it kind of gets like that. And the more you do it, the more you feel that way.
That's it for this episode, but not quite it for safety as a topic overall. The subject will come up again in the future, we're sure. We hope that the basics got covered enough for you to be prepared to go solo. Astrid has a super packing list available to you on her website. Huh, I wonder if stick umbrella is on it. Well, you're going to get no spoilers from me. Get Astrid's complimentary packing list yourself on her website, astridtravel.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. We invite you to rate us and review us. We love your feedback. And if you like what you're hearing, please share us with a friend. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you join us next time for Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.